Good morning from 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. And welcome to our election special candidates forum. As each Saturday this month, we speak to one candidate vying for the Democratic nomination for congressperson from Virginia's 5th District. The program is underwritten by the Daily Progress with support from Rebecca's Natural Food and Hamilton's at First and Main. Now here are your hosts, Bob McAdams and Jeff Leonard.
Good morning, Charlottesville. Happy spring. I'm Jeff Leonard, WPVC's founder and general manager.
And I'm Bob McAdams, Special Events Coordinator at WPVC.
Today we're co-hosting the WPVC Election Special, one of four interviews each with a Democratic candidate for Congress from the 5th District. Keep in mind, WPVC does not endorse any candidate for public office. We provide this information to you, our listeners, to help you choose the best candidate. And you, our listeners, are helping us by submitting your questions.
With us in the studio this morning is Congressional Candidate Leslie Cookburn. Leslie, welcome to WPVC.
Thank you.
Leslie, we can start a little bit here by getting to know a bit about you. Now, where were you born and what was your life like as you were growing up?
Well, first of all, I should say I live in Rappahannock County, which is an hour north of Charlottesville, and we have no stoplight and more cows than people. So we've been there for 19 years, and before that I lived in Washington. My background is I was an investigative journalist for 35 years. Before that, I grew up in a little town called Hillsborough in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm the first person in my family to move back to Virginia since my grandparents. My grandparents lived here before World War I, and my grandfather fought as a Marine in World War I, and my grandmother stayed here and volunteered in the War Department. So I have a wonderful photograph of her almost exactly 100 years ago on the lawn at Mount Vernon with her friends having a picnic.
Okay, so you started in San Francisco and you wound up here in Rappahannock. Is that because of your career, your education? And how did that career and education prepare you to represent the 5th District in Congress?
Well, I think there were a lot of elements. I do have some family background in Virginia on the same grandmother that was here. Her mother's family were in Virginia forever. So I had always loved the idea of being in Virginia. I moved east when I went to college, and because my family were California pioneers. So that part of the family from Virginia actually had a farm a fruit farm in the foothills of the Sierras, which is very much like Rappahannock County. So in a way, it was like coming home. So I moved east, and then I went to London. I became a journalist. I started working at NBC News. I learned everything about radio and television at NBC, and then moved over to 60 Minutes in London. I traveled the world. I then eventually came back to New York working with CBS Reports, which was the great documentary program for years. And then ended up, I was at 60 Minutes a couple of times for a number of years, and then also was at ABC News and was a correspondent at PBS Frontline. So I've really covered the map in broadcast journalism. I won the 10 of the top awards in broadcast journalism and covered the world. I covered six wars. I covered Wall Street, some politics. But every one of those stories had some piece of it back in Washington. So I was endlessly up on Capitol Hill holding somebody's feet to the fire for what was going on in U.S. policy.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard. In the studio with us today is Leslie. Is it Cockburn? Cockburn is the correct pronunciation. I win. Leslie, what have you been doing in the 5th District in recent years that set your candidacy apart?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, I have this really very extensive resume in journalism, which helps in terms of tackling the problems that we face right now. Not only that, but I have been a conservationist for years. I've been involved with the battles against pipelines, power lines, uranium mining, all through the Piedmont Environmental Council, which is based up in Warrenton but covers 9 counties. So that's an important piece because part of my platform is about the environment, whether you're talking about the pipelines or whether you're talking about the the whole issue of clean water, clean air. We have a congressman now who has rolled back streams protection so that you can put coal ash in streams. These kinds of things are important to me because of that conservation background. But also, you know, we have, I joined this race because of the effect of Donald Trump coming into the presidency, no question. And I am like many other people who did that. We have literally hundreds of candidates now who are seeking office because of Donald Trump. And we also have a mini Trump in my district. We have Tom Garrett, who has voted. If you look at his voting record, I would vote opposite to those votes on absolutely every issue. So it's a time I felt that it was, I was asked by two local party chairs to consider it. I had never considered running for Congress. And as a journalist, you can't. And you can't even give someone a $25 donation. So, but that was behind me. So I thought, well, let's see. And I started driving around this district. And believe me, it is huge. It's bigger than New Jersey. It's bigger than Vermont. But approaching it as I would as a journalist, going around really asking people questions about what's going on in this county or that county? How can we address things? And I decided that it is possible to get something done.
Running for Congress is a huge deal and an even bigger sacrifice. And you touched on it a little bit. So other than Donald Trump ascending to the presidency, why did you decide to run and sacrifice sort of a pretty, most of the candidates have a pretty good life and they're giving up a lot to be able to do this?
Well, I think that for me, this is a critical issue. It's not just, should I run for Congress? It's, this country is in danger of being shredded by the current administration. And because of that, I felt very strongly that anyone with the tools and the ability to stand up against these people should stand up. And I have my husband is a journalist, and we've been married over 40 years. He's very supportive. I have three wonderful adult children. They're all good Democrats. They're supportive. Even my four grandchildren are supportive. So it's the time. And I have put my entire life aside to do this really 7 days a week.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams, and with us in the studio today is Leslie Coburn. Leslie, a top issue for all the candidates is health care. Do you believe that health care is a right? And if so, how do you propose to make health care a reality for all the people?
Well, having traveled this district, now it's over 40,000 miles on the car, I can tell you that everyone's top issue is health care. And as soon as Tom Garrett voted to take health care away from 23 million people, I started going around to local clinics to see what that effect would be. And it was devastating. I went to the Blue Ridge Clinic down in Nelson and found that 1,600 children would lose health care in that one clinic. Everyone has a pre-existing condition. Everyone has some relative who's in a nursing home, and of course, two-thirds of the patients are on Medicaid. Everyone has someone who is related to someone who needs special education. That's Medicaid funding. Transportation in this district is so bad that the transportation funding that you get from Medicaid is essential to many people to get to the clinic, to have someone come to you with your medication. We have serious health issues here. And I believe I am 100% supportive of Medicare for all. And what that means is there's a bill right now in the House. And I would sign my name to that bill. There are already 121 signatures on it. It's now sponsored by Keith Ellison. And Medicare for all is very different from just having Medicare as an option on the Affordable Care Act exchange. Because what it does is you're turning the system into, we have a broken system right now, totally broken. We have some good models in Canada, Britain, France, Germany, they're all slightly different, but they resemble in terms of what we're used to, Medicare or TRICARE. These are the things that actually work in this country, and we need to cut out the vast cost of administrative costs. We could cut out about $500 billion in administrative costs by switching to this system. By negotiating with Big Pharma, by saying you have to cut your prices, we would save another $150 billion off the bat. We are going to be saving. Right now, this country spends $3.2 trillion a year on health care. And a lot of that is wasted. It's excess. It's people. We have people who go to the emergency room for preventative care because they have no other option. They can't afford anything. It's a broken system, and I believe that Medicare for All is the answer to it because, believe me, I think it is wrong that in this country, 700,000 people a year go bankrupt through Medicare, medical costs.
What do you say to people when you're in the more rural aspects or areas of the district, and they tend to lean right, and they vote for individuals who are bent on taking their health care away? What do you say to them to let them to just get a chance to get to receive their vote?
Well, it's interesting because at this stage of the campaign, most of us are talking to Democrats. We're rallying all the Democrats all over the district. But I was at an event the other day in Farmville, and there was a whole table full of Republicans there. And interestingly enough, on the issue of health care, they didn't disagree. You know, they may have felt differently about guns or about other things, but healthcare, no. And I think I think there is some crossover there.
We have a question from a listener in Charlottesville about another important issue, the economy. And the questioner wrote, in America, the richest country in history, the top 1% own most of the wealth, while more than 45 million Americans are living below the poverty line. Good jobs are being automated and people replaced by machines and computers. At the same time, the corporations are earning record profits. How do you define the problems with the economy, and what should Congress do about it?
Well, let's start with raising the minimum wage. The minimum wage is not a livable wage. So we have people, a lot of people, working three jobs. I'm running into people who are working four jobs. This is not sustainable. It's impossible. We've had wage stagnation in this country since the 70s. I'm a union member. I believe in collective bargaining. We don't have a lot of unions in this district. So at some other level, and I'd say the congressional level, we can do something about the fact that people cannot get by. We used to have an American compact, a sense that if you worked really hard, you could buy a place to live, you could educate your kids, you could do better. And that has utterly fallen apart. So we have to address that. I think that, ladling $1.5 trillion to the corporations, which has just happened with the most recent tax bill, is obscene. What that does is if you add $1.5 trillion to the deficit by this giveaway to corporations, what you're doing is you're taking it away through automatic cuts from Medicare, from Medicaid, from farm programs, critical in this district. It is a rural district. We do care about farming here. And also things like the Black Lung Trust Fund, or money that goes to this wonderful small renaissance in Danville in the River District. It even affects my local volunteer fire department in the emergency services. So the giveaway, the continual giveaway to the corporations. Trump this is just such naked greed. We need to reverse it and repair it.
Our education system succeeds for some, but it fails for others. What are you hearing from students and teachers about the problems that they're facing, and how can Congress help them?
Well, I think we should fire Betsy DeVos. That would be a good start. Interestingly enough, in the budget that's on the table right now in Congress, Betsy DeVos asked for massive cuts, over $3 billion in the education department. Congress did not go along with this. They, in fact, asked for a raise in Head Start, for example, in money for counselors, in all the things that the public schools desperately need. In this district, public schools are starved. We have teachers who are earning a paltry sum. And in fact, a good way to think of it is one teacher recently said to me, oh, my colleague has left teaching because she can earn much more as a babysitter. We do not respect our teachers, not just the teachers. It's the bus drivers. It's the cafeteria workers. It's the people in the schools who are having to deal with all these lockdowns that are going on now because of the gun threats. So the whole putting education first is what we have to do. And there are a whole group of Democrats, by the way, on the Hill who have a plan to do just that. They just need more Democrats to sign on to that. But education is a top priority in this district. We have a situation in Virginia where only 18% of kids in Virginia have pre-K, whereas in Washington, D.C., it's 81%. Why is that? We need 2 years of pre-K. We need free community college. Yes, we can pay for this, because believe me, the Republicans are wasting and spending a lot of money in Washington that can be moved over into education.
Well, thank you, Leslie. This is a great discussion. We need to take a short break. You're listening to 94.7 WPBC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. And we're back. Hey, I'm Jeff Leonard, and I'm co-hosting with Bob McAdams, a 94.7 WPBC election special interview with congressional candidate Leslie Coburn. Bob and Leslie, we were talking about the issues.
And the issues don't get any easier, including this question from a listener in Charlottesville. The earth is warming, ice caps melting, sea levels rising. We are getting unprecedented tropical storms, floods, and extreme heat. Climate change is happening to us daily, and the future looks worse. What is your comprehensive plan to address climate change?
Well, I certainly don't have a comprehensive plan, but I'll tell you that I would do everything in my power for the United States to jump right back into the Paris Accord. Fortunately, it takes 4 years to withdraw from the Paris Accord, and by that time, perhaps Trump will no longer be with us. But just thinking about climate change, which is a very critical issue for me, in the district, we have two pipelines which are planned to come across this district. The methane that will leak from those pipelines is the equivalent, in greenhouse gas terms, of 46 coal-fired plants. So right here in the 5th District, we are increasing the level of methane. We will be doing great damage to our climate issues, and this should be turned around. The fact that can happen with no one in Washington addressing it is appalling.
In regards to changing the climate, something that I've noticed is that if you pass legislation, it's going to require people to change how they do things and how we generate power, how we distribute power. Where do you see that going in terms of congressional legislation?
Well, for the 5th District, it's great, because this is one of the best places in the whole region for renewable energy, for solar particularly. In Charlottesville, we have some great solar companies, and around the district, Southside, every county has a solar project. Lots of those projects, the people running them don't even know about each other. We have a renewable energy center in Rocky Mount in Franklin County, where you can learn everything you need to learn about solar, wind, geothermal. So we're poised to take advantage of renewables. Last year, solar power produced 6 times more jobs than any other job creator in the country. We want a piece of that. We need to develop, it is the best potential for this district, renewable energy jobs, and the idea that we would be building frack gas pipelines at this point is so wrong, because we have, first of all, that energy is not coming to Virginia. It's passing through Virginia and out the other side to North Carolina and beyond, and some of it overseas. So we have plenty of energy here to last us into the 2030s. So let's think renewable right now. Let's develop those jobs. Let's build up that whole sector of the Virginia economy.
Yeah, I see the... I don't know what, I can only imagine what the people in Nelson County are going through right now as their land becomes basically clear cut. But I think that's a great point, that the gas that's coming through here isn't staying here. It's going to North Carolina, it's getting loaded up on ships and taken over to Europe. What are you hearing? First of all, I was driving through Nelson, I think it was last Saturday, and there's like pro-pipeline signs. I have no idea who those people are, but what are you hearing from the Nelson County folks about what's going on down there?
Well, people in Nelson County are devastated by this. You have, you know, when you think about the 5th District, you have a lot of rural counties like Nelson, and everyone's trying to think, how do we move forward here? how do we really build the 5th District in a way that helps people and is makes it a continuing to be a great place to live? And the answer is tourism. And Nelson has absolutely done a brilliant job of that. You have Wintergreen. You have cideries, breweries, wedding venues, job creators. So what do the pipeline people do? They put the pipeline right through all of those businesses. Why would you do that? That pipeline then goes on into Buckingham County, where there is a historic freedman community called Union Hill. People who live in Union Hill are related, some of their ancestors, it's the first place they farmed after slavery was abolished. It's an African-American community, and there's going to be a huge compressor station right in the middle of it. A compressor station spews toxic chemicals. It vents methane. It causes, when you look around the country, first of all, they can explode. We have 45 families living with right within the blast zone. And it sounds like four diesel locomotives at all times. Can you imagine living that way? So the pipeline issue, it's trampling on the rights of people in the 5th District. It should never go through a historic district. It should never go through some of these sustainable farms that are creating jobs, that are have spin-off businesses. And it's something that if our congressman up in Washington was awake, he could go over to FERC and make sure that FERC obeyed the law. They have to. These pipelines are crossing over 1,000 waterways, including the James River. Have they done the analysis of each one of these important waterways? And the answer is no. Have they done the analysis of the effect of mountaintop removal? No. So this must be done. That is a congressperson's job.
Another challenging issue is coming from the Black Lives Matter movement and the events in Charlottesville in July and August of last summer. And they're confronting us with the racism that's in our society. What should be the response personally and legislatively in order to finally overcome racism?
Well, first of all, I support Black Lives Matter, and I also support Color of Change. Rashad Robinson, who runs Color of Change, was one of my very first supporters. I think that if you look at what happened on August 12th, how can we respond in Congress to that? If you think about what Black Lives Matter cares about most, you will see that there are probably six bills sitting, waiting to be signed up in Congress that have to do with police treatment of African-American young men, whether it's racial sensitivity training, whether it's body cams for police, whether it's stopping the militarization of the police. All of these things can be addressed. We need a few more Democrats up there to address them. In fact, two bills were introduced last year by Steve Cohen, of Congressman Steve Cohen of Memphis, who has endorsed me, and he's very concerned about these issues. So I would sign my name to those bills that really help change the culture of the police. We've already had over 200 killings since the beginning of the year in the United States. These kinds of killings really must stop. But another response in Congress that I would like to follow through with is that after what happened in Charlottesville, how do we address racism? Well, we can address institutional racism. And the way we can do that is two things right away. One is school-to-prison pipeline. We have a terrible problem here of African-American kids getting railroaded in the wrong direction. And we can fix that by going back to the schools. We need counselors that have time to think about the kids. We need special education that includes some of these children who are underserved so that they don't fall through the cracks. So it has to do with education funding, and it has to do with a change in the way we regard discipline in our schools and how it should be addressed. Also, we have some terrible prisons in this district. So criminal justice reform should be at the forefront of any congressman's thinking. We have prisons where, there's a women's prison in Fluvanna that has had very public problems with no health care for prisoners. We have women there who suffered from cancer and had tumors growing out of their bodies. Should we stop this? I think that would be a good idea. So there are several aspects of criminal justice reform. We have kids going into jail for because of marijuana. That's not smart. And a lot of other states have figured out that you don't want to add to the 2.2 million prison population in this country, unprecedented of any country on earth, by doing that. So I think we can attack institutional racism now that people realize that racial justice is an issue that must be addressed.
Part of the criticism from the Clinton campaign in the last go around and of Democrats in general is they've lost the ability to communicate with the communities of color, or at least engage with the communities of color. How are you engaging with communities of color around the 5th District, and what's your plan, or if there is a plan, to sort of do that on a more national level so the Democrats will have a chance to take back the presidency, the House, and the Senate?
Well, I've spent a lot of time with communities of color around the 5th District. You know, in African-American communities, there are some powerful women who are, and they and I really have a lot in common. So I think it's not a difficult thing to do. And the key, as ever, is simply to say, all right, what is it that's most important to you? And as we've said before, the most important issue in that community is healthcare, by far. So you have to address it. Listen, pay attention to it. I was at a meeting last night in Henry County with some absolutely fantastic people there who were supporting me. And one issue that's very important to them is, can you hold Big Pharma's feet to the fire? And the answer is yes. Let's get up there and hold some hearings so that Big Pharma, which is gouging us with drug prices and has also been pushing opioids. Fortunately, we now have New York City and several states suing them for that. But let's bring that. Let's open that all up in Congress. Let's bring them up, and maybe some people will have to go to jail.
Well, yeah, they're going to start executing or continue executing, or at least Trump wants to, drug dealers. I wonder if Big Pharma is shaking in their boots. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the 5th District Congressional Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard, and with us in the studio today is Leslie Coburn. Leslie, gun violence takes a terrible toll on America. School shooting in Parkland, Florida enrages the students who are clearly and forcibly demanding legislators pass common sense gun laws. What gun laws do you support in Congress? And will you refuse to accept campaign donations and support from the National Rifle Association?
First of all, I am so excited about these high school students, and I am going to march. So I will be out there in Washington marching with them. I do think that they are leading the way in the most wonderful way. They're powerful. They're determined. They will shame people on the Hill who are taking NRA contributions. I will not be taking NRA contributions. In this district, you know, we have Tom Garrett, who is easily bought, only $2,000 from the NRA, and he's with them all the way. I think I'll probably get an F rating. But I come from a culture, both my parents were hunters. We hunt on my farm. Hunting is a very different thing than weapons of war. As an adult, because I was a journalist for 35 years, I covered six wars, some of them several times. I have seen the effects of weapons of war, and believe me, we don't want them here. I watched Mogadishu destroyed in Somalia. I watched Kabul destroyed in Afghanistan in 1993. I have seen the damage that can be done. We need to make a distinction. Let's say right now a weapon for hunting is very different from a weapon of war. And given that, there is legislation that's on the table right now, which is a new assault weapons ban. And I support it 100%. It's similar to the 1994 assault weapons ban that was retired 10 years later, which really did have an effect on these massacres. So let's sign that legislation again. It bans purchases of bump stocks. It bans purchases of high-capacity magazines. It solves a lot of problems. Let's start right there. And then also, the other thing is, besides what everyone, including 90% of hunters, agree on, is getting rid of these background check loopholes. But beyond that, there is a women's issue here, which is domestic violence. If you make sure that someone guilty of domestic violence does not get a hold of a weapon, you are actually going to stop over 50% of these massacres, such as the one in church in Texas. That was someone who had severely beaten his wife, who had broken the skull of his stepson. The military knew that record and didn't pass it on to the relevant authorities. So we have a clogged bureaucracy. We need to make sure that everyone knows if someone is guilty of domestic violence, and that person should not have a gun.
You think, these kids in Florida, and my children also, and children around the country, they're coming for these politicians, Democrats and Republicans alike. I mean, they are going to rise up and throw these leaders out for absolutely doing nothing. Do you think the leaders in Washington are aware of that yet?
I think they're scared.
They should be.
And I think this is really amazing that you have 18-year-olds who have that power. It is a great thing that's happening.
Let's hope. Another issue that affects young people and affects 94.7 WPVC is Charlottesville's only Spanish language radio station. Is that people brought to America as children, had protection from deportation under President Obama, but President Trump has taken away that protection. What will you do to help keep the dreamers here, and where do you stand on immigration law in general?
Well, it's very distressing that there has been no resolution in this current budget for the dreamers. Right now, we have the dreamers are in limbo. We have Dreamer supporters there. We have Dreamers on our team in Danville. They are in a terrible straits here in Charlottesville. If you spend time with groups like Without Barriers, Sin Barreras, and they recognize that in the Charlottesville area, there are probably 14,000 people who rely on them for help, for figuring out what to do, how to navigate this new Trump land that we're all in. Because since Trump has come into office, there is much more of a climate of fear among people. And they feel that Trump has opened a Pandora's box and allowed people to treat them in a way that people should not be treated in this country. And I think that that we need full immigration reform. It would be a top priority for me. And fortunately, what I see in this district, one, we don't like the fact that ICE is like our new Gestapo. We don't like the fact that ICE has pop-up roadblocks taking people away here, right in the fifth. And there's a whole bunch of people who have, become a kind of underground sanctuary movement. I think of Harriet Tubman and her Underground Railroad. So people want to protect immigrants, and I think that's a very hopeful sign, but we need full immigration reform. Fortunately, what are the biggest generators of the economy in the 5th District? We have agriculture, we have timber, we have tourism. The forestry department said to me, immigration reform is a top priority for us. Who do you think plants all those trees in our district? Because we have the wood basket here. We have huge amounts of timber. Everything has to be replanted. That is immigrant labor. Also, we have poultry farms. That is immigrant labor. So we should not only be normalizing and making sure that they can work here, but the conditions are good, that pay is good. The fact that we have all these people who are endlessly running scared, not knowing what their status is must be changed.
You know, 94.7 got a grant from Virginia Law Society. We've actually hired a lawyer to come in here and take calls in Spanish from immigration in people of questionable immigration status. And most of the calls that come in are from the jail. And it seems like ICE is going into the jail with people who are represented by attorneys, and they're interviewing potential undocumented immigrants beyond the awareness or the presence of their lawyer. So coming up next at 12 o'clock is El Club del Sabor. We switch over 100% in Spanish. So the people that are listening, the immigrants in Charlottesville and beyond, what do you say to them to say, please give me a chance, I will be your defender?
Well, I point to something that happened recently in Fauquier County, which is that the sheriff wanted to have an agreement with ICE where they would share information, and the people of Fauquier County rose up. They said, we will not do this. This is not what we want, and they are not doing that. So it is possible to have enough pressure, and not only on Capitol Hill, but all over this country. If you can have high schoolers marching for gun issues, let's all march for immigration.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams. Leslie, the Me Too movement is unmasking the abuse of power to extort sexual favors by men who control the future of women. At the same time, a woman's right to make her own reproductive choices is being challenged, and women still are often paid less than men for the same job. What should Congress do to protect the rights of women?
Well, first of all, women now make 80% of what men make. This is unconscionable. It has actually been illegal since the Kennedy administration to do that, but there is no enforcement at all. So we need to put our names to legislation that enforces equal pay. Also, women's reproductive rights are indeed under attack, severe attack. You know, this is pretty shocking, because when you go to the Planned Parenthood clinic here in Charlottesville, which is a beautiful clinic, it's a wonderful place to go for education, to be treated. In the Obama administration, contraception became free. This changed everything. It meant that there were fewer unwanted pregnancies. We saw the road to successful reproductive rights in this country. And the Trump administration is desperately trying to attack that and tear it apart. It is a woman's right. Choice is a woman's right. Let's start treating women as full citizens.
I've asked this question of all the candidates. Is it time for the Equal Rights Amendment?
Of course it is. Of course it is. It just makes me laugh. I've spent my entire adult life being in very, very highly competitive fields and pushing for a woman being able to do certain things. When I first started out in the work of covering wars, not a lot of women were doing it, really very few. And I had to carve out a place in that, which was not easy. And when I first started in broadcast journalism, the laws had just changed that women could wear pants in the office.
On another issue, the Trump administration has proposed an infrastructure bill with no real funds. They're depending on private investment and private ownership. What is your plan to rebuild and strengthen our nation's infrastructure?
Well, first of all, to do that, you have to get on the Transportation Infrastructure Committee. So if there's an opening there, that would be a good thing. We have serious infrastructure problems in the 5th District, but we have a very interesting thing going on, which is in Alta Vista, down in Campbell County, we have Virginia Technical Institute. This is a place where people are highly trained in infrastructure jobs. Every single one of them gets a job. What you learn when you go there is the average age for infrastructure workers is 57 years old. They are training a new generation. All those jobs pay extremely well. And there are many more jobs in the district in infrastructure open to those applicants. So if you're a welder, if you're a pipe fitter, if you're an electrician, if you're a high-end plumber, you can get these jobs. So we need more infrastructure funding. We do not need the Trump model. I was very happy to speak about infrastructure. I was very happy to see that the budget on the Hill did not accommodate his desire for a wall. They said, well, if we have any additions to the wall, it has to be designs already submitted and vetted, which means that Trump can't design his new wall, which I thought was wonderful. He's stopped on that front. But infrastructure is collapsing in this country. So, yes, it is so obvious that we need to take money from the incredible wasteful situations we have right now. I will give you one example. A friend of mine is the Inspector General for Afghanistan, John Sopko, and he refers to the Afghan government as my favorite kleptocrats. So we have spent billions and billions of dollars wasted, billions in that country, where we should be spending that in this country, and particularly the 5th District.
Where do you stand in terms of the privatization of public functions? You have the infrastructure bill that Trump proposed had private roads that would be financed through tolls, but we also have private prisons and other, you know, for-profit entities taking over public functions.
I don't support that at all. I don't think it works. I think in the end, you have to take the profit motive out of there. Greed is not a good thing when it comes to public infrastructure. And we pay our taxes so that we can have decent schools, so that we can have good infrastructure. That's why we're paying our taxes. So let's get some return without shunting it off to private companies.
A question that's really been on the minds of people lately, the American president he's the commander-in-chief, the chief of state, but only Congress is supposed to declare war. With Donald Trump's erratic behavior and plans for greatly increased military spending, including new nuclear weapons, many people fear that he will start a war, even a nuclear war. If elected, what will you do to prevent war?
Well, I have a many years background in looking at wars that the United States has been involved in, and also in looking at our entire nuclear infrastructure, whether it's nuclear weapons, nuclear power. I have a long history of that. So what I see with Trump is a very dangerous situation. I think right now we are in danger of heading in the direction of war with Iran. John Bolton has just come into the White House. I think that this is a very bad development, because the Iran deal, which was put together by very, very seasoned people who understand the Middle East, who understand nuclear issues, they understood that it works, that it's the right way to prevent war. And getting close to, we're not going to win a war with Iran. We're going to end up in another quagmire. Don't forget, how much has it cost, all these wars? We got into Iraq because of weapons of mass destruction that don't exist. How much did we spend? We got into Afghanistan because we were supposedly going after Al-Qaeda. We're no longer going after Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. We have spent trillions of dollars on wars that have not been a success, and the human cost is terrible. The human cost to be cavalier about going into a war situation. When you have, I spoke with a whole group of veterans the other day in Franklin County. These people have been suffering and dealing with PTSD, some of them since the Vietnam War, some of them since the first Gulf War. These are people who we should be taking serious care of, and we are not. In Franklin County, if you're a vet and you're looking for a dentist, you're probably not going to find one. There's one dentist for thousands of people. The priorities, the ease with which we get into a war situation, and then we do not look at the consequences. Let's make the veterans a top priority. Let's make the soldiers a top priority. Let's not throw money at defense contractors and hop into a new war where we are in danger of awakening the nuclear monster here. North Korea is a very delicate situation right now. It is very disturbing that Trump is in the White House having to make these decisions. So what we need in Congress is more people who understand how not to go to war.
Well, thank you, Lisa. I hate to interrupt the discussion, but we need to take another short break. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville's election special interview with Leslie Coburn. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jeff Leonard. I'm sitting here with co-host Bob McAdams in 94.7 WPVC election special interview with congressional candidate Leslie Coburn. Bob and Leslie, we've got one more segment to talk about the issues.
Well, Leslie, because next year in Congress, some of the issues, maybe most of the issues you would face, are just unpredictable. We're going to have some general questions. To start, what do you see as the proper role of government?
The proper role of government is to, one, is to do the people's bidding. That is the proper role of government. And it's also to make sure that since we have powerful forces in this country, We have huge, powerful corporations. We have huge, powerful banks. Therefore, they have lobbyists, and they are running around Washington like crazy. What we have to make sure is that the playing field is fair. We need fairness, and government can ensure that. That's why it's so important that you don't rip apart the Environmental Protection Agency. That's why you have to respect things like Dodd-Frank, which was a response to what happened in the terrible crash we all experienced. If you don't have government operating that way, it's a jungle. So I believe that government has a very important role to play.
Now, every year, Congress should prepare a budget. That process is often a mess, and this year is no exception there. What would be your top budget priorities if elected?
Well, there are all sorts of, a top budget priority is making sure that the money is available for health care for all. That's a top priority. A top priority is repairing the damage in the Environmental Protection Agency. A top priority is restoring the Department of Education, which we have, right now. I'll give you an example. We've had a problem with student loan fraud. There are a lot of students who have paid a lot of money to go to online universities that have defrauded them. The Obama administration made sure that there was a method, a means to come back and complain and question this. Right now in the Department of Education, there are stacks of thousands of those complaints. There are no people to go through that. Most of the people have been fired. Last count, there were only 14 people looking at some 80 to 90,000 pieces of paper from students who are in desperate need of help with their student loans. The Department of Education is not functioning properly. So those are the rules. You know, this is what government and what a congressperson needs to make as a priority. Also, smaller things, but not so small in the 5th District. This administration says that you should pay three times as much as you used to pay to go into the Shenandoah National Park. That's $70 per car. The national parks belong to the people. By law, they belong to the people. If you're charging $70, people cannot go. They're not going to go for a two-hour hike. They're not going to go for a picnic. And this fantastic resource that belongs to the people won't be used. That needs to be changed. It's a small thing for the nation, but it's a very, very important thing for the 5th District. And my county, Rappahannock, depends on the tourism, depends on the national park. So you have to look at these big issues like health care. Let's get that sorted out. But also the smaller issues that impact us so powerfully here.
Now, the other side of budget questions is taxes. What changes to the tax laws, particularly the one that was recently passed, would you want to have enacted?
Well, I would reverse what's just been done. They've just added $1.5 trillion to the deficit of this country. That was, with a stroke of a pen, we have given huge breaks to corporations. We've given breaks to high earners who do not need it, many who do not want it. What are they thinking? It looks to me that legislation was very good for the Trump business enterprises. So perhaps that's what it was all about. Perhaps it was just personal greed. But that has to be reversed. You know, $1.5 trillion is a huge amount. It is the same amount as all student loans in this country. For that same amount of money, we could get rid of every student loan. So I think that it was so irresponsible and damaging, and it needs to be reversed.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard. With us in the studio today is Leslie Coburn. Leslie, Republicans have been using every trick possible to keep Democrats from getting elected. Gerrymandering, restrictive voter ID laws, purging voter registration rolls, it just goes on and on. What would you do in Congress, or what should Congress do to protect each person's right to vote?
Well, I think there's a huge movement now against gerrymandering. That's a good thing. But I think that the Republicans, we have a huge problem with money in campaigns. Who knows how much money Tom Garrett will rustle up for this campaign? But it'll probably be Koch brothers money, you know, dark money of all kinds. And this really distorts the whole Democratic process, because Democrats are always racing to keep up with that big money. So I would really think about Citizens United. I would think about getting all that corporate money out of politics. And I will not be taking money from corporate PACs. In fact, I can't think of a corporate PAC that would want to give money to an X60 Minutes producer.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. Our interview today is with Leslie Coburn. I'm Bob McAdams. Leslie, let's talk about getting elected. The 5th District, as you mentioned, is pretty large. It goes from close to the Maryland border all the way to the border with North Carolina. If nominated, what is your strategy for winning the election in November?
Well, what we would do, my campaign, is we'll keep doing what we're doing. I've already put 40,000 miles on my car. So that means last night I was in Henry County, then I was in Charlotte County. Today I'm in Charlottesville. Tomorrow I'm in Madison. We have built a fantastic field operation. We have over 500 volunteers. We have fellows. We have a brilliant staff. Everyone's working 24/7. That's how you win. And I think the thing about this election is that Tom Garrett has a record now. We know his votes. And that record has really been very disturbing to a lot of people in the 5th. So people will come out. They will, and the key really is getting out the vote. We actually have, if you look at the numbers, we have more dedicated Democrats in this district than we do Republicans. This is very interesting. It's by about 4,000 people. It is really, let's be Democrats. Let's not be small R Republicans. Let's be Democrats, and let's offer platforms that get people out to vote.
Now, this huge district covers a lot of very expensive media markets. How do you plan to fund your campaign? Particularly, you said you're not expecting any corporations to come with contributions.
Well, we're doing very well with fundraising. Fundraising is hard. We have already got 1,500 donors, and we're doing very well. You have to put in the time, and you can't start once you are nominated. You have to start. You know, I started a long time ago. I started last year. I started last summer. So I think the fundraising is going extremely well. You don't want to waste money in a campaign. It happens often. There is something called the election industrial complex. A lot of people will want to take a piece of what you build in a campaign. So you have to make sure that you're spending it wisely. And in my view, there was an Obama model in the Obama election. And what it was building powerful field organizations, building leaders, community leaders in every county. That's the way to win. It's not through a big TV campaign. It's not through, radio is better than television, actually. Radio.
Yes, it is.
But I do think that that we have a unique, this is a very special time. 2018 is a very special time. We have a blue wave happening all around the country, and we saw it in the November 7th elections in Virginia. So we have a window. And I think that this district has just been named a swing district. That's very exciting, and I think it's because of Tom Garrett's weakness. His office has been closed. There's so many people, except Jason Kessler, who was allowed in there. But it has been closed, and he hasn't responded not just to Democrats. He hasn't responded to, I asked the Cattlemen's Association, when did you last see Tom Garrett? And they said, well, we don't see Tom Garrett. So what priorities does this person have? There is so much more we can do with an open door in that office. I suggested the other night that we just take the hinges right off the door so that everybody in the 5th comes to their embassy in Washington.
Now, to get elected in the fall, you have to win the nomination in the spring. Now, the 5th District Democratic Committee has chosen a caucus plus convention nominating process. What do you need to do to win the nomination?
First of all, the caucus process is very simple. It seems complicated. But if anyone wants to know how it works, go to va5caucus.com and you will find out. The caucus, every county will have a caucus. So here in Charlottesville, there'll be a caucus. In Albemarle, there'll be a caucus. This is the place where people can vote. It is the one place. We have no primary. So you go to the caucus, and you are voting. You go to the corner where your candidate's people are, and you vote for people who are standing as delegates. Those delegates will then go to the convention in Farmville on May 5th, and they will vote for that candidate. So all you have to do is go to the caucus site, go to the corner with your candidate's people, and vote. And it's everyone needs to come to the caucus. And as I say, to find out more about it, you go to va5caucus.com.
I think the one here is April 16th at Monticello High School, right, Bob?
That's for Albemarle County.
And
then we have the caucus for Charlottesville City is April 21st. And that, I believe, is at Burley Middle School.
Well, thanks. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Leslie, if you want to know more, what is your website?
LeslieCoburnForCongress.com.
Excellent. Leslie, thanks so much for spending an hour with us on WPVC listeners. This is the last in our series of election special interviews, but all of them will be available on podcasts from our website, 947WPVC.org or SevillePodcast.com. We thank each of the candidates, Ben Cullip, Andrew Sneetherin, R.D. Huffstetler, and Leslie Coburn for giving us their time. And thank you so much to all of our listeners. We hope this has been informative.
You've been listening to the 94.7 WPVC Election Special Candidates Forum. The program is underwritten by the Daily Progress with support from Rebecca's Natural Food and Hamilton's at First and Main.